So with respect to the science initiative, this is a mandate from the legislature going back two sessions. That has advanced very well, too. The planning for that is underway. Programmatic changes are underway. That project is going to result in dramatic changes to the way science is taught and learned in the College of in a number of departments, the foundational sciences, and that will lead to hopefully significant new facilities for the foundational science courses too. So that's well underway. And we'll come back to that again in the course of talking about the governor's recommendations. I'd also like to remind you of the trustees' education initiative, whose purpose is to dramatically improve the quality of the graduates of the College of Education, which in turn will affect K-12 education in the years to come significantly across the state. That effort ties in very closely with the science initiative as well, which is going to change the way science educators are taught, and in turn the way students will learn. With respect to facilities, thanks to the legislature, we have a number of things going on. The NZ STEM building, Michael B. NZ STEM building, with which you're familiar, is, as we speak, being occupied by its relevant science departments. Classes will begin in that building at the beginning of the second semester. We're very excited about that. The High Bay Research Facility is under construction and is coming along very well. That facility will result in that's very high-intensity, high-expense projects, research projects related very much to research on extraction of minerals from difficult formations. It has a potential. The work that will go on there has the potential of revolutionizing minerals extraction, particularly energy minerals, all around the world. And it's, as many of you know, it's intensely interesting to a number of energy companies around the world. The engineering building that's related to the engineering initiative, planning for that is well along also. That's a little bit farther out, but with some luck and in planning and in fundraising, we may be able to look for a groundbreaking for that building as early as late in the coming calendar year. The BSL-3 facility, which part of the State Veterinary Lab in West Laramie, that has gotten a lot of attention from this body and others over the last few years. I'm happy to say that construction documents are well along. We are hopeful that bids can be solicited early in the coming calendar year, and that will lead to a year-plus construction project, and then a certification, a federal certification that has to follow that. We'll talk about that in some more detail later. I should remind you, though, that there are no appropriations related to this project, as funding for it has been determined by the legislature to be coming from the state's risk pool. Different kind of project. Again, this is a mandate from the legislature two sessions ago. Fix the credit transfer problem from the community colleges to the university. We've made great progress on that with working very closely with the seven community college presidents who have been great partners in this. And also there's been partnership created at the lower administrative levels, too, but where the coordination of this kind of thing has to go on. We have there are 17 degree programs that account for 17 degree programs at the university that account for approximately half of the transferees from the community colleges. These programs are now articulated or very, very closely articulated over this group of 17 programs times seven community colleges. That's about 119 different degree programs that need to be coordinated and articulated. Approximately 100 of those are done, and we've made enough progress on those so that we're now in a position to look at the next group of degree programs that need to be articulated. These number approximately 20. And with those done, so that would be approximately 35 to 40 degree programs or so. Those will account for 2/3 to 3/4 of the community college transferees to the university. Primary purpose, enable a high school student to see exactly what courses need to be taken in what order to spend 2 years at a community college, get an associate's degree, and then spend 2 more years at the university and get a bachelor's degree. In 4 years, that's the goal. And I'm happy to report that we're making significant progress on that. Lastly, but not least, in sort of a summary report, athletics is coming along very well. The university's goal is to compete at the highest levels in the Mountain West Conference. We're all proud of what happened last spring in Las Vegas with the basketball team. Football had a tough season this year, but it's very much of a rebuilding one, and it finished on a high note, obviously. Coach Bull is here, and we'll be happy to talk with you about that. So in summary, we've come a long way in the last 2 years, and I would say this is not about me, but it's about the group of people that I have to work with. None of this would have been possible without the vice presidents and their staffs and the deans working very, very hard in a number of directions. And so we've come a long way. We can be a lot better, and we will be a lot better. But we're pointed in the right direction. A last thing I'd say connected to this is that a year ago at this time, we had 4 interim deans. I already mentioned Dean Pishko joining us in engineering. We were very successful in our recruiting efforts so that in 2015, we hired new deans for business, for education, and for engineering and for law. That is a I'm not sure how often that happens in other universities, but it's we're already reaping the benefits of that. The university is already reaping the benefits, and so the students are, and so will the state. Turning to the UW's budget situation and the governor's recommendations, as I said, we think that the governor's recommendations are very fair under the circumstances that the state faces in terms of revenue, and that's what we'll be talking about for the rest of the day. The included in the governor's recommendations is a $5 million reduction in the block grant. I guess I would say about that we will cope with that. It is a burden coming on top of the $22.7 million or so reduction in the standard budget to the university in the current biennium. We have coped with that also. I would say that the burden of those cuts and previous cuts have fallen very heavily outside of the academic enterprise that was by design. But we've come to a point where we, dealing with this cut to the block grant, that is going to be more challenging, and I cannot say to you that the academic enterprise will not be affected by it. We are looking everywhere at ways to be more efficient. I started by mentioning the fiscal and budget system, which is very badly needed to assist in this effort. But we are commencing the deans and the vice presidents are cooperating on a program evaluation process. It may lead to a reduction in degree programs. We're at the very early stages of that, but that is going to be happening. We need to do it, and we'll see where it leads. The circumstances are for undertaking that are good in the sense that in my mind, the vice presidents and the deans are working more closely together than they have, at least over the 9 years that I've been at the university, and I suspect for going back further than that. So we have our work cut out for us, that's where we are. We know we need to do it, and we are going to be doing it. So to summarize again, I think the governor's recommendations are fair and reasonable under the circumstances. We have work to do in both the academic side of the house and in the administrative side of the house to accommodate the discipline, the additional discipline that's needed to respond to the state's fiscal situation, and we will do it. So I think with that, I will be here, but I'm going to turn the proceedings over to Vice President Mai, and but I'll be happy to answer any questions you have right now, but I'll be available to
any questions. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just President McGinnity, just a little update on the student housing initiative or situation. Or it's been an interest, I think, in the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, the General Counsel has been involved in that planning, as has Vice President Mai, and so they can make some more detailed comments about this. It is a significant need that the university has. We have gone very softly on seeking funds for that purpose at this point in time, but we reckon, particularly given the situation that the state faces, but it is a very significant need of the university, and we'll be happy to talk with that in more detail as we go along.
Other questions? Senator Burns.
Just two quick ones, because we all live in our own little bubble. Is it finals time there now or next week?
Next week, Senator.
Next week's finals. And you were talking about the capital construction going on there. I hardly ever get over there at all, being where I live. There was a bunch of construction going on in the Performing Arts Center, I believe. Is that complete?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, it is. The Performing Arts Center has been in use for this entire semester. There was a dedication of it, I believe it was about mid-October or so. And it's really a spectacular facility, and I urge a visit.
Yeah. Anybody else have any other questions for President McGinnity?
It's not you.
Okay. Bill, we'll turn it over to you.
Mr. Chairman, how has the committee proceeded on these? Do you want to go through the exception budgets?
No, we're going to go right through the whole thing.
Through the standard and the exceptions?
Yes, please.
Okay. Mr. President, I think the first relevant page is 19, I believe. I've been focused on exception budgets, so please keep me on track if I miss something on that. Page 19 is relevant for two reasons. The standard budget reduction is shown at the top of that page, the $5 million biennial reduction.
See.
And that's to the block grant. Therefore, it doesn't impact in the way I understand it, it doesn't impact SER. It doesn't impact the Tier 1 engineering appropriations. It's straight out of the block grant.
Okay. I guess, do you have any idea why? I mean, in your discussions with the governor?
Mr. President.
He doesn't give much of an explanation, so I don't know why.
Mr. Chairman, there was a target set for overall standard budget reductions, and the university shared in that, as it pretty much has to, given the proportion of the university's budget in the general fund.
Okay. Well, I know that when we had the budget cuts earlier a couple years ago, I mean, the university was the only one that really did the 10% budget cut. And I don't think you've recuperated from that, have you? I mean, that has never been backfilled like other agencies within the state. Is that a fair statement?
It's, Mr. Chairman, a relatively fair statement. I mean, the governor's office and the legislature obviously was generous to us in the sense that we were part of the state employee pay raises. Mm-hmm. The university has gone through two tuition increases since, 4% each year. And those 4% tuition increases amount to a total of $2 million in a year. So it's about $500,000 per percent The lion's share of that this last time was devoted again to compensation. Biggest chunk of that, obviously, given the way our budget breaks out, the lion's share of that went to the faculty side of the university. And I'll put in my shameless plug now for staff compensation, and I do think that staff at the University of Wyoming has been on the short side of that, as probably you would expect. The focus at the university obviously is academics, and that's where resources are focused. The staff side, we have just gone through continue to go through an evaluation in conjunction with A&I's Human Resources Division. And, we find that, you know, I think A&I would make the case that compared to, you know, current markets, that overall staff, state employee compensation is at a certain level. And what we did was compare just to those state employees, not to a market, but to state employees. And I was a little surprised to find that UW staff employees are significantly below market in some areas that, frankly, the $1 million that you, as a legislature, gave to us this current year for recruitment or retention is huge, in the sense that we actually do have, on the staff side of this, you know, David Jones is in the audience. He's the provost, and he can certainly speak to the faculty side. But on the staff side of the equation, most of those folks, or a good number of those folks, end up kind of under my overall purview. And that recruitment and retention money is huge for me, because I don't think we have enough resources to really address some of our critical needs positions, and I'd characterize those as IT folks. Vice President for Information Technology is here also, Robert Aylward. He can speak to that. He's at a kind of a critical juncture too, and I think our accounting and fiscal folks and HR folks, we flat can't recruit people very effectively right now. Front Range just takes most of the qualified people in that regard.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill, just so I'm clear, what do you mean by staff? Your definition of staff employees.
Mr. Chairman, good question. And sorry, I think I've fallen into the university way of being myself. And so staff, in my mind, is anybody that is not an administrator and is not faculty.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mai, just to follow up on, you mentioned the tuition increases, and my recollection was there was one just recently voted on, the 4%. And just, could you go into a little bit more detail? Was that 4% across the board, both in-state and out-of-state? And what does that dollar amount look like generally? I know you said that it's going to be typically used for compensation purposes, but can you flesh that out just a little bit more for us?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question, Representative, because it is important to know what that money is intended for. And the first 2% of that, half of it, is right off the bat goes to academic affairs, and that is for mandatory type raises associated with promotion in faculty rank. So that's $1 million of the total goes there right off the bat. There's also, as you probably read and hopefully have forgotten, but I'll remind you of the pain now, we've had some funding challenges among the colleges, and one of the colleges in particular is Arts and Sciences. And so there's a really fine relatively new dean there, Paula Lutz, who inherited a situation wherein her budget was $3 million in the red. And so 1% of that is 1% of the 4% tuition increase is directed to academic affairs to address those kinds of issues too. And that, frankly, is pretty much a drop in the bucket to address overall campus needs just in that area. And that's just to bring everybody kind of back up to the basic starting line. And I'm sorry, I stepped past the first part of the question. The answer to the first part of the question is, yes, the 4% applies to both resident and non-resident tuition. Okay. Yes.
Bill, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill, just so can you give us, first of all, on the Section 1 funds then? So that's tuitions in that, right, what you just talked about, and, of course, state aid. So what's kind of, do you have, maybe it's somewhere, I just can't find it, but it just kind of that historical run, what's that look like the last 6-7 years, you know, with the $22 million, the $5 million tuition? What's that look like? I mean, do you have those numbers? Has it generally gone up, stayed flat, kind of?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, I want to make sure I'm hearing the question correctly. Are you talking about all of Section 1? What does that top line look like on Section 1?
What's that look like? And then, you know, I mean, there's what? There's federal mineral royalties. There's state lands.
Mr. Chairman, the remaining, and I don't mean to sound flippant about this because it is significant money, but you are talking about basically a $200 million general fund appropriation per year into that Section 1 enterprise. It's huge. I mean, that is a lot of money, and there's no way around that. Interesting that you would ask the question, and I know you don't need another homework assignment, but I will tell you that part of what we've done in the last year and a half or so is to try to organize our data in a way that would make sense to other consumers of the data, i.e. JAC and the governor's office. And so I will tell you, this budget document is real different than what you've seen in the past. This is the annual budget that's approved now by the trustees. And part of what we did in revamping this was to summarize those revenue streams and try to give you some proportionality of those. So I will tell you, this is online and you can look at it, but basically the general fund piece is Section 1. Mr. Chairman, should we back up and talk the difference between Section 1 and Section 2 right quick?
Yeah, just go ahead.
Chairman, then I think, and you've had, you want to talk about research funds, those kind of, just sure. Update the committee on all that.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, so Section 1 is basically the operations of the university. All the meat of the university happens there as far as the teaching enterprise and that kind of thing. Section 2 has historically been everything else. We further broke that out this year into a Section 3. And so Section 3 now is purely research, the research enterprise. And Dr. Gern, the Vice President for Research, is here. So if you have any questions along those lines, he would be the best person to get into details on that. So what we're trying to do is present a little bit cleaner picture for external consumption, but also, frankly, for us internally as we try to balance the overall needs of the university. So Section 1, again, is the general operation of the university. Section 2 now is essentially the auxiliaries, what I'll call auxiliaries, but the biggest chunk of that is student housing and dining. That's the overwhelming majority of that. But there are other components of the university that fall into Section 2, and that includes motor pool. And sort of closely associated with the motor pool is the bus transportation system. And those are pretty big components that are largely either self-funded through parking permits and, as you probably hear from a lot of people, tickets. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the physical plant falls into both budgets to a degree because they serve the auxiliary enterprises, residence life and dining services. So all the dorms and all are served by them as well. So there's a foot in both buckets there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, quick question.
Yes.
Bill, where is foundation money in here, or is that completely distinct?
Mr. Chairman, the majority of the foundation money is in Section 1, I believe.
Is that correct, Darlene? Most of it's in 2?
I stand corrected. I think the revenue piece of it is in Section 2. There's another piece of it wherein a number of the foundation employees are actually in Section 1 of the budget. So I appreciate the questions because it does get to the complexity, and frankly, in my opinion, the unnecessary complexity of the way we budget as a university. So we're trying to get a handle on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad you're at the helm of that. it needs to be fixed, really, it does.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill, a little bit of detail, please, on the Section 3, what you envision that being.
Mr. Chairman, Section 3 then is the research enterprise, and so any external grants, whether they're federal, state, or private, frankly, grants that come in for specific research will flow through that. There's also, I hope I'm not misspeaking Bill here, but there is a chunk in there that is scholarship related as well, or federal aid related.
Federal student loan.
Right. Federal student loan related. It's a small piece of it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you. What's the revenue source for Section 2?
Mr. Chairman, primarily fees. So the fees that students pay, the cost that they pay to live in the dorms and to eat at the dining halls, those are Section 2 revenues. The parking permit fees are Section 2. And then there are specific student fees also that go into Section 2 to support various enterprises. But also kind of not exactly in the same vein or not exactly related would be all the revenues from the university store, the bookstore. So that, you know, that's kind of – it's a little different – kind of revenue, but it is Section 2.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So where do all the matching grant money, how do they funnel through? Where do they funnel through, Section 2 or Section 3?
Mr. Chairman, they used to funnel through Section 2. We used to lump all of that into Section 2. They're now all in Section 3.
All of it. So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
And then so the federal mineral royalties stream, it's – that, does that come off of the university land, or how does that? Or is that part? How does that work,
Mr. Chairman? FMRs, remember, under $200 million.
Just under our cap division.
Right. That's the 6.75%. I believe is 6.75, yeah. Isn't it, Don?
Okay. Now you have that. You looks like you divide that in between Section 1 and Section 2.
FMRs,
or do you have it all in Section 1 funds?
Huh? Is that the
time out, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Chairman, you're teaching me something about my own budget here. I did not realize, but the bond portion, the bond repayment portion of that FMR amount, which is really what the majority of the purpose of that FMR is for, that flows through Section 2, the bond repayment piece does.
And that's about half
of
your FMR. So the other ones are just spent in your budget?
They are, but I believe, Mr. Chairman, I believe they are. There are some pretty specific restrictions on that. It's like,
so then just... So I don't want to get too far in the weeds on this, Mr. Chairman, but just so you can pledge that stream like the state could or any that FMR stream for bonding purposes. Right. Is it pretty well bonded out? Have you used – I know that fluctuates. Sometimes we get a report. Maybe it's in here, and I just haven't got to it.
Mr. Chairman, we can provide you with a I wish I'd brought it with me because I just have – I just get it copied and give it to you right now. But the FMR stream, we have a good and the bonding capacity that goes along with it. We have a good track record of that, or good history of it for you, and projections going out for when those revenues free up. It's in the high 90s committed right now, percentage-wise.
And that's been all over. I mean, I know some of it was performing arts or visual arts build. I mean, we've used it for a lot of different purposes.
Right, Mr. Chairman. I think the biggest pieces right now are committed for student housing projects. And remember, there were a number of projects involving the residence halls, the main residence halls, that were mostly life, health, safety
fires,
related.
Yeah.
A lot of money poured into those dorms.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator.
Yeah, so I'm looking on page 10 of the budget here, and this is where you're the section two, and in there you're talking about your federal mineral royalties, and so as you divide up that you're talking about in the section two, this is where the federal mineral royalties used for the payment of debt service on UW's outstanding revenue bond issues, cab repair and improvements, and purchase of real estate. That's in here, and it looks to me like that's roughly half of the total. That's roughly not quite half of the total mineral royalty stream. Is the rest of the mineral royalties and the you say you've got about 90% pledged for payment. Is that just for other kind of other bonding or other commitments in under Section 1? Is that how we're reading this in the budget?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. There was a report submitted to the Joint Appropriations Committee recently, and that may be what you're working from. I'm not sure.
I'm just looking right in the budget, page 10 of the budget.
Okay. This report should correlate to page 10. $5.3 million on this debt service component, and most of that, let's see here, biggest chunk of that is visual arts and Downey residence hall. There's another pretty significant piece that goes to Half Acre Performing Arts and White residence hall. Beyond that, expenditures, there is in the Section 1 budget $7 million dedicated to maintenance and operation of plants. So that's, you know, goes to, Mr. Chairman, one of Senator Burns' questions recently.
So that would account for the, I mean, you've got the seven that's in Section 1, the other six and changes in Section 2, and that accounts for the total of the 13 change in federal mineral royalty money.
Right. It does, Mr. Chairman, but there are, you know, the full disclosure is there are some special needs at the university, and one of those needs is property acquisition. And so whenever there are FMRs that go unused, those monies essentially get earmarked into a separate account for property acquisition, and it takes an action by me to use them for any other purpose. Well, as you're aware, the university has been acquiring so much property north of Lewis Street for either the STEM building or the engineering building, or now, you know, we're hopeful that we're going to spend some of the remainder of any money we have, which at this point isn't a whole lot, on that block of 9th and Lewis for the science building.
Right. So, Mr. Chairman, the FMRs, they're classified in Section 1 or Section 2 based upon what the stream is supporting, and that those would vary depending on if one bond's paid off and maybe something else is bonded. They may vary between 1 and 2 and will from now henceforward, right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I mean, those FMRs are essentially fully committed going forward.
Okay.
What little frees up, and they have, the university's been successful at refunding bonds in certain cases, and anytime that frees up any money, that money's been primarily earmarked for property acquisition.
Okay. Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, in light of commodity prices, how accurate are those numbers, or what price is that based on?
Mr. Chairman, the good thing is that the university's cut comes on the $200 million amount, and if we frankly drop below that level, we have a lot bigger problem.
Okay, so we've got that guaranteed.
It's steady, okay. Yeah. It's steady, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Okay. Bill, you mentioned Mr. Aylward and IT. Have we fixed the wireless problem over there that we had to refix our appropriation last year?
Mr. Chairman, I certainly would defer that answer to Vice President Aylward, but before I let him come up here, I finish out the answer to the co-chair's question? Mr. Chairman, this is a graph, Steve. I'm sorry. I think you can see the two big pieces, and this is the point I want to make with you. This is Section 1, okay? And Section 1 totals $270,200,000 roughly, okay? This brown section is the state's general fund. Mm-hmm. This slice right here, so I mean, essentially you've used up the whole pie at that point, but that chunk right there is $63.6 million. That's university income fund, and that is the fees, that's the tuition. There are a few other little odds and ends in there, but essentially that's tuition and fees right there, the Section 1 piece of fees.
Okay.
So you can see how the general fund absolutely dwarfs the tuition side of this thing.
Okay. All right.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, just to kind of wrap that up. So then moving to the Section 2 and the dividing out, and has that changed significantly, though? I mean, are we getting more research grants? We're going to be able to see it now more clearly, for sure.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe you will be able to see it more clearly. I think it's pretty steady, and I'm stepping in front of Vice President Gern here because he's a very enthusiastic vice president for research, and he focuses on the positive, and you know me, I tend to go the other way, but we had a pretty good year last year. I think we went up from about 85, Bill, to 100 million.
We're at 95.
95 for this year, so 95 million this year.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
One other question before we leave this section. And do you trace at all the number of students at UW that are receiving some form of Hathaway?
We do, Mr. Chairman. And we have the appropriate person here to go into that if you would like to, but we can certainly provide you reports in that regard.
No, I'm just curious as the percentage or the numbers. And you can provide that.
Fifty percent is the number I'm getting, Mr. Chairman.
50% of the students, or
50% of the resident students.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Don, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, Bill. You mentioned that we get a report every year, which is really nice. It's about, I guess, 40 pages that summarizes all of that. Is that out yet for 2015, or does that come in January?
Mr. Chairman, I think I was trying to hear the question I wanted to hear, and I thought you were talking about the report to legislators, but I think you're talking about the Hathaway Scholarship Report.
Mr. Chairman, Bill, I was talking about the report to legislators, which okay. seems to have that in a nice condensed form, but I think the senator asked about Hathaway.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm being told to direct you to a report that was submitted to JAC dated December. I think it was last week it was sent over here, and that does report the Hathaway Scholarship Program in general, in nice condensed general terms.
Do we have those?
Yes. We got hard copies and electronic copies.
Well, okay. Let's move on. I guess we'll get it one way or the other.
Okay.
I don't think I've seen it. But.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. I've got all.
And other questions on this area? I do have a question pending out there about the wireless. Did we fix that?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, this is Robert Aylward, Vice President for Information Technology.
Robert?
Good morning. Is that on? Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. So we've just went through a lengthy process on the RFP process. That RFP actually went out. The response to the RFP went out 2 weeks ago, and so we've selected a vendor and we'll be implementing the upgrade to the wireless system that we have on campus in the next few months.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're going to be implementing it. How long is the implementation going to take?
Mr. Chairman, members. It's actually going to take quite a bit of time. So our current system will be upgraded relatively easily because that's replacing the access points. Some of the rest of it requires extensive new wiring to those access points, and so that'll take place over a period of probably 4 to 5 months.
So basically the entire next semester?
Yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Robert. Okay, Bill, let's kind of walk through this.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Again, page 19 is the general fund reduction to the block grant of $5 million. Also on page 19 starts the exception request for compensation.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you want to go through these individually or kind of as they relate to each other or.
I'll leave it up to you, but, you know, what we have been doing is just going through them.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, the first piece on page 19 relates to priority one, and that was a request for the university to be treated in the same manner as whatever the governor would recommend or the legislature would approve, frankly, for overall state employee compensation. Last year, I think it was 2% or 2.5%, and the university was treated in the same manner. Okay. Governor denied that, as I believe he denied all state compensation, state employee compensation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I kind of have a question. Might be for the governor's office or anything, but, you know, so far I've seen in agencies a certain amount of creep due to increase in insurance costs and then raises have been given in the past. So I haven't seen cuts from the base budget to the new standard budget in the other agencies. And I'm just questioning the rationale behind this $5 million cut.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's – I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around it.
Don't think anybody here is going to speak for the governor necessarily.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Kevin. The community colleges cut about the same amount that the university was expected to cut as a percentage basis. And also there's plenty of cuts that took place in the agency's budgets. There's $18.7 million that came out of the agency's budgets through standard budget cuts. The salaries, if you recall, the Section 353, which required all the agencies to come in at or below their 15 and 16 budget amount, naturally, the appropriations that were made for the University of Wyoming and also the executive branch were included into the standard budget that was authorized by the legislature. But in the development of the budget this last time, $2.3 million was the savings that we had that was at or below the 2015-16 budget with respect after you've taken the salary increases. So we met that expectation of Section 353 on the executive side. Of the organization. You're correct. There is increases to the benefit package. We've discussed that, and I've got a handout I'd be happy to work with the committee with on that represents why the medical benefit increases and what shares those were. I'd be happy to share with that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think just first publicly, I should say, even though everyone here knows this, I'm an employee, a professor at the university, and a department head. And so I do have comments on the first two priorities. Ultimately, I think when it came to one vote last year, I did declare a conflict. But I do have some questions, and I might declare a conflict as we go on if we do some voting. But here are my questions with priorities one and two to start with. That I'm curious about the university's failure to give a dollar amount to employee raises, for example. That, and in fact, the governor's comment says that as no dollar amount has been requested, basically I have no fiscal recommendation. And then with priority one and priority two, there's kind of a discussion about the market pay for university faculty and staff. And Mr. Mai actually talked about staff salaries being 17% below state employees' salaries. And we know that faculty salaries are at about the 44th percentile. So we're significantly lower than comparators around the country, as well as with our staff being below state employees. And so I'm curious about the failure to make this a priority with actual dollar figures. If we want to recruit and retain like we do in K-12, we want to pay well. So I'm curious about the failure to give a dollar figure here.
Mr. Chairman, I think the university's rationale in approaching it the way we did, and we laid out the fact that a 1% compensation increase requires $2 million per year. So if we were to give a university overall broad 1% pay increase, you're talking about a biennial cost of $4 million. And we laid that out very clearly to the governor, and I think the discussions that we had with the governor, I would characterize them as we were sensitive to the revenue picture that was developing. Given that the governor approaches all state agencies, including community colleges, in the same way, we deferred to him in that request. But we did make it our number one priority to say, of any monies that come to the university, our top priority would be this, but the political climate, I believe, that we're sensitive to as an administration is, it isn't just us out there, it's all state agencies.
Sure. Okay. Sorry, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill, just a few things. The $5 million coming off the block grant, I mean, I'm assuming that's just a carve out. It's nowhere specific then. And, just a sense of a couple of things, just a sense for me of what that means for the university, and cutting that. And then, you know, in your narrative on the first two sections there, we're talking quite a bit about trying to close the gaps. And I'd like a sense of the gaps that we're talking about regionally. So the kind of those two things, where's the, you know, kind of like what is that $500 million since it's, you know, nothing I'm seeing in a specific line item. I mean, I'm seeing the 318, 419, 969 standard and then exception requests and reductions by the governor in several areas of $34 million in different places. But just kind of a sense of what that means, and then the gaps.
Mr. Chairman, it's kind of a two-part question, I think. Part one first, and that's what does the $5 million reduction mean for the university? And I'm going to step out on an unauthorized limb here and say if it were – straight $5 million. We haven't gone through the FY17 budgeting process yet, so that would be to be determined. But I will tell you there's been direction and discussion with all of the deans and all of the main players at the university about program prioritization. And that includes the academic enterprise, degree prioritization. Where's the demand? And where can we look for reprioritizing funds at the university? The second part of the question, I think, is maybe it's part 1A or 1B. The $5 million reduction, I had this discussion with the deans on Tuesday morning early to say, you can't look at this as a $5 million reduction because we have a number of other places that we have to concentrate some significant funding amounts at this university. And you need to be focused more along the lines of where can we find $20 million or that ballpark of funding over the coming biennium? Where can $20 million of general fund monies come from? Part of that has to do with the fiscal systems that we'll get into shortly. And the university's commitment to that project, and frankly, the understanding that the legislature would have a difficult time funding that entire amount that'll be necessary. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the second part of the question now.
And then looking at the gaps.
Right. Mr. Chairman, thank you. There was another report submitted by the university to the legislature regarding market pay. But I will tell you, just generally speaking, if you want a kind of an off-the-cuff kind of remark, Representative Connolly talked about the difference between university staff employees and state employees. I think the broad stroke answer on the faculty side, and Vice President Jones is sitting here beside me, but I think the broad stroke answer on that is that the university sits at about 87-88% of market on faculty. But there are pluses and minuses to that when you get into the rank of faculty and the specific types of faculty.
And if I'm correct, having said on management audit, that's 89% of the comparators that we revamped and utilized in that audit. Is that correct? So it's not across the nation.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. This was that is based on the comparator data that we gathered for universities that were deemed to be more similar to what the University of Wyoming is, land-grant universities, sure, west of the Mississippi, much closer to the region. That is right. Correct.
Right. And, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just to be clear, it's 89% of the 50 percentile, and so we're at about the 44th percentile.
That's correct.
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay, so we're on any further questions on priority number one? If not, we'll move to priority number two.
Mr. Chairman, you also have a report on that recruitment retention piece, and that is, if I can preface that just slightly, that report you're going to see reflects the faculty side of this. So the staff side of this is slightly different. I think on the faculty side, again, Vice President Jones is the proper person to speak to this. That was focused more on retention. And right now on the staff side, we are in scramble mode for a number of those high-priority positions, IT again, fiscal people, HR people, and there are a few others that fall into that category, or into that high value target priority, I guess. And so on the staff side, it's mostly a recruitment effort.
Okay. Would you like to address us, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, The majority of the funds that were appropriated on the academic side for the faculty side, we did allocate out to the colleges for retention purposes. I did hold a small amount back thinking that I might have to deal with some retention issues very soon this year. I think that one of the primary questions that I've been getting is, well, did it work? And so far I would say that it has in terms of retaining faculty. I have not heard of any of the faculty that were allocated retention funds that that are still looking to leave the university.
Good. So this is $2 million recurring, biennialized.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. So Vice President Jones didn't direct you there, but he alluded to it. Page 2 of that report that was submitted will show you by college the number of folks that were retained. Remember, that money is biennialized. That goes into salaries. And so that million that was awarded last time comes back to us as a $2 million, in salaries, $2 million for the biennium. Now then we requested another $2 million in that priority two, to continue this effort. And that $2 million would be for the biennium. That's the amount for the biennium. So it's a continuation of the one-year, $1 million amount approach.
But I want to make sure I'm clear here. You're only asking for $2 million for the biennium, or are you asking for four now? Well, the one became part of the standard budget.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. There's $2 million in the standard now to pay for those raises that were awarded.
Right.
There's another $2 million being requested this time to do a one-year, $1 million pot again.
I get it.
That would carry forward.
Okay. And will any of this then go to the staff, or is it just for faculty?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's about a 60-40 split, roughly, faculty-staff.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think the next item, if you're ready to move on.
Sure.
Next item is priority number 3. And with your indulgence, I would ask Trustee John McKinley to come sit beside me and help me explain this. I'll editorialize a little bit and say John's a shining star that's been added to the university board of trustees, and he's been immensely helpful to me in my efforts.
John, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the committee's permission, I would like to go back to priority 1 and 2 just briefly and add a couple points from the trustees'
sure.
perspective. With regard to priority number 1, that was a high priority from the university standpoint and the trustee standpoint, to address some of the concerns identified by you, Mr. Chairman, with regard to the previous cuts and then trying to catch back up. For purposes of full disclosure, I wanted to make it clear that a 1% salary increase, section 1 and 2 across the board, results in a $2 million annualized cost, which when that gets annualized into the salary increase is $6 million for the biennium. And that's what a 1% would do on the biennium is my recollection, because you have the $2 million a year increase, which then gets rolled to $6 million for that biennium. If it's compounded.
You lost us on that one.
Yeah, so far I'm getting 2 plus 2 equals 6.
Yeah, you can, but...
Mr. Chairman, what Trustee McKinley is saying is if you give a 1% salary increase in each of the years of the biennium, it costs you $6 billion.
Oh, so it's 1% on the second time, over what you had the first time.
Mr. Chairman, and then when you compound that first year, it results in a total for the $6 million. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody has the same numbers as far as what we're looking at. With regard to number two, the recruitment and retention has been a very successful program. We would encourage a continuation of that program. Item number three, Bill, the fiscal system. As far as the non-student, non-academic side of the university, this is the high priority, as everybody here understands. The present system, for lack of a better explanation, and as somebody from Daniel, I would describe the system that the university is using currently is a hybrid of a Big Chief pad and pencil system to a large extent. It is non-functional to operate a business enterprise of that size in an efficient manner, both from the fiscal standpoint, operation standpoint, and education standpoint. And as the legislature, I would view this as a very important priority to get the fiscal shop of the University of Wyoming in order to assist Bill Mai in getting to that next step. So we have a very efficient system so he can track on a real-time basis everything happening across the board over in Laramie at the university and on the auxiliary side. In addition, have the ability to provide reports to the administration, to the Board of Trustees, to the legislature, to the governor's office on a more timely and real-time basis instead of, for example, if I would ask Bill to provide information regarding the science initiative and how that is progressing with regard to program X, Bill can do it. It will take him about a week and a half. And when I get that information from Bill, it will be very accurate. But if I say, Bill, is this accurate today? It will take him another week and a half to gather the information to respond to that because of the system. Now, that may be somewhat of an exaggeration, but that is how the system presently works. So Bill's shop and Bill has been in the process of hiring consultants and getting a recommendation. And that process was accelerated because the consultants were able to skip a step and to determine there was a dire need for a new fiscal system. So they recently came back to Bill with their recommendation and their cost estimate. We had originally estimated that the cost would be approximately $15 million plus or minus for the implementation of and this new system. So since we received that cost update, it is going to be in the magnitude of $30 million.
Whoa.
So that is the cost. And I'm going to for that new fiscal system. And so I'm going to briefly explain how, and we just received this information. And so we want to put this on the table so everybody understands it. We've had brief discussions on ways to fund that. And in the present UW's request, there is a $1 million recurring, a $5 million one-time, and the $5 million was intended to be a set-aside to build the pot towards the $15 million cost. Because of the recommendation, the university would like to accelerate implementation of that fiscal system and begin that process next spring and get it moving. So in order to do that and cover that $30 million, the initial discussions at this point in time are to leave the $1 million and the $5 million of one time and to increase the $5 million of one-time by an additional $5.5 million for a total of one-time of $10,500,000, and with the reoccurring, that's $11,500,000 for that fiscal system for this biennium. Bill would then sit down with every unit and college on campus because they all benefit from that increased fiscal efficiency and system. And internally, the University of Wyoming, out of block grants, Section 1, Section 2 monies, would put together $10.5 million, and that gets it to $22 million. So that leaves us $8 million short, which would then, in what the thought process is now, is at the end of the implementation of this new fiscal system, in the uh, 1920 biennium, we'd come back for 3.5 at that time. And so 3.5 would then get us to the 29 with the 1 million recurring that's already in there, would get us to 30. That is the thought process at this time. We hate to hit you with such a big change at this point in the budget process. But because this is a high priority and because we just received the cost estimate, we felt it was very important to just put all the cards on the table. Here's where we are. So for that item, we would request that the one-time $5 million would be increased along the lines discussed.
Mr. Chairman?
If we can go back over those figures. But.
I had a question on the figures because, John, what I understood is that the reoccurring million was for staff and ongoing support. But when you're running through your numbers, you were using part of that million to be part of the capital cost of the system, if I heard that right.
Mr. Chairman, you did hear me right. I'll let Bill explain why that is.
Mr. Chairman, the
just
third.
A sec. We gave you some money last year, right? Was it $1 million on this?
It was $1 million, Mr. Chairman. And you have a report on how that money was expended is being expended. Majority of it's going toward this consultant. There's a component of it that's an ongoing piece for personnel, though, and I can certainly explain that to you as well.
Yeah. If you would, please.
Do you want that one first or Representative Greer's first?
We need
first?
To know where our base is Kay. Now and then go on to Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, let me give you a little bit of the detail of the $30 million. So there is a component in each of these years that's an ongoing component. So that's in answer to your question, Representative Greer. There is additional software licensing costs that are going to be annual costs and some small personnel costs in that. So the million figures into it. Okay. Mr. Chairman, the way that we see it right now, and again, these consultants have worked a lot quicker than they had intended to. As Trustee McPherson indicated, they're able to jump ahead a step. And I think these guys are, and I do say guys because they're guys. All of these people are guys. So it's maybe still not proper, but these people are very higher education oriented. They've done this at a number of places, at big places. And some, if we had other trustees here, they would explain to you that some of these systems, complete system overhauls, have cost over $60 million at some institutions. So I guess if there's any good news, it's that at least it isn't 60. But it ain't real good news in my book. But I do want to tell you that when we talk systems, we're talking overall systems. We're talking about getting systems that communicate with student data, that communicate with grants data, that will tie this whole university together the way it ought to be done in the 21st century. There is a significant HR component to this thing, and frankly, the HR side of this, it's a small amount of the cost. That actually is that 3.5 split in the 1920 timeframe. So we're pushing that out to last, but it really does. I mean, this place is a personnel intensive institution. That's where the money's at. And if we do this without integrating the HR systems into this, it's going to be a big mistake to do that. It's got to be comprehensive. So John is exactly right. The first level of this is $23 million, and that occurs in 17-18. And that takes care of the fiscal side of it and a big amount of the fiscal reporting that we need. And so what's envisioned is if we can allocate this money for this purpose, again, the legislative side of it, the executive side of it being half, $11.5 million out of the 23, and UW finding the 11.5 through program efficiencies or whatever it is that we end up being able to do. That's the 23, and the implementation begins in March, and what's envisioned right now is by July of 2017, so about a 16-month process, we anticipate going live with the financial side of this thing.
Okay, so let's go back to Representative Greer's question. So we have the numbers, so we know exactly how this fits.
Yeah, and I'll just restate that. I understood that $1 million reoccurring was staff and subscription fees and ongoing costs. How are we saving, if my math is right, $8 million towards the second level? Is that what you had factored in?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. The $1 million is an ongoing biennial appropriation. So that comes back in 1920. And then we add 3.5 from our side and 3.5 from the legislative side, from the general fund side. It's all general fund. I mean, let's be honest about it. But we take that $7 million of systems money and add it to the million ongoing. So there's a significant chunk of that thing that is an ongoing cost, and that's we're factoring all the revenue into it, or all the. Money that's going to be necessary into it, both the ongoing and the one-time systems costs.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
So just a couple of questions. So right there. Go full circle back to where you started, Mr. Chairman. You're asking not only for this $5 million, but an additional $5.5 million. And you're going to over the 50% match it through institutional funds. You're going to reorganize and get you to that $30 million mark. So my question is this, and a couple questions, but as you study this and you look, obviously you went out and seen what peer institutions have done. I mean, this isn't, everybody's probably in this deal. So is this going to be, we all get concerned about these large tech projects that try to pull everything together sometimes, and we've had them in our own state that haven't quite worked the way the dream was. I would think that this is, it's not cutting edge. Other institutions are doing this. We're going to go out and buy some modules, pull this thing together, and see what's being done. So can you comment on that?
You bet, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the question. That's exactly correct, Mr. Co-Chair. We selected, the consultant is Huron Consulting, and we selected them, frankly, after interviewing a number of consulting groups. These guys far and away were the higher ed guys. They just were. They've done this kind of work down at CU, CSU, big East Coast schools that'll go unnamed. They're not in our conference. And big West Coast schools that aren't in our conference that'll go unnamed. And I mean big enrollment universities they've done this at. I think where we're not at right now is we don't know exactly which one we're going to choose. We don't know what system we're going to choose. There are, I think, about three options out there that are viable. And I have my opinions, and the Vice President for Information Technology has his opinion, and it's a really valuable opinion, and I wouldn't discount it for a second. I think we're kind of on opposite sides of the fence right now, and our consultants are caught right in the middle of it. And that's good, because I think they're going to give a fair evaluation to all of these systems. And part of this, part of what they're doing for us right now, frankly, is looking at all of our processes. And that includes what I would characterize as a woefully inadequate budgeting process, because I think Section 1 has always been the focus of our budgeting at the university, and Section 2 exists primarily because of the lady sitting behind me and some very hard personal work she's put into it to try to get that university budgeting on Section 2. And so this is both accounting, budgeting, rolled into, you know, a unified system that would be in place by July of 17. Then the HR components come on, and the student data pieces come on kind of sort of in between HR and the financials. And I know the granting part is I've kind of overlooked it, but actually I think the granting part of this thing, the research grants part of it, is sort of the last component to get fully integrated. But
okay, and then my next question then with that is, Mr. Chairman, the whole idea behind this obviously is to, you've got basically, in a biennial term, I don't know, it's $500 million enterprise. Is that right? Maybe it's more that we don't, I mean, it's somewhere, when you biennialize, 200, whatever that number is.
Mr. Chairman, when you look at the whole thing, it's about $500 million a year.
$500 million a year, then. So when you pull it all in, this is all, the whole $500 million a year is going to be pulled into this. Find out where it's at. You obviously are going to, the goal is to gain some efficiencies, be a leaner organization. And I think part of that then, so what do you, I'm not asking for any guarantees, but what, it's been done in other places. What is going to be the cost savings? There's got to be some kind of percentage you've talked about. Or,
Mr. Chairman, I view this as a two-part question. If that's okay, I think I agree with you 100% that we are looking for efficiencies here. I'll answer the second part first, and that is what potential savings could come of this. And I will tell you that consultants have looked at this, and they're real goosey about me using these numbers, but I'm going to use them anyway because I think it's relevant to this committee. I think reasonably you could see between $3 and $5 million per year of savings once fully implemented. But when, and here's the second part of the question, way more importantly than that, Mr. Chairman, so much more importantly than $3 or $5 million in this institution is the ability to have qualified people doing critical jobs with all the information they need to do them. And right now what we do, and this is why this recruitment and retention thing is so important that you gave us that this last time, we cannibalize within the university for fiscal people. And I can't speak to that as far as IT folks go, but fiscal people are highly sought after at the University of Wyoming, to the point where I poached one from your state budget office here for a critical need over at the university. You'll thank me when you go through this afternoon's budget. Trust me, Mr. Chairman, you will. It was a targeted hire. But it is so hard to get. We put out advertisements for fiscal folks, and we're trying to hire CPAs for $35,000. Well, CPAs are getting hired by my buddy who runs an accounting firm down in Fort Collins for twice that amount. They're not going to come to Laramie for half the amount for the atmosphere, you know? And so that recruiting thing is huge for us. It will help us to build this kind of qualified and trainable central accounting core that has to go out and service these colleges to make sure A, things are being done correctly, and B, once these systems are in place, they can do it in a uniform manner. That helps with the whole unification of that fiscal approach. Right now, we don't have it. I mean, there are a lot of really good people there, and I'm not knocking any of them, but they work for deans, they work for department heads, they're kind of scattered here or there. And Dean Pishko and I, frankly, we don't have any hair to pull out, as you can probably tell, but we have been beating our heads against the walls trying to get qualified fiscal folks over in the College of Engineering. And I got to tell you, for Dean, this guy is incredibly, incredibly cooperative with administration. He has done everything. He trusts us to try to help him get the right kind of help. And so what we've done is we've taken some of that money and helped plus up salaries for him to be able to hire the right folks to account for that critical tier one money and effort. And guess what? We poached somebody from somewhere else on the campus. And so now we're trying to figure out where does it hurt us least to have a hole in this system. And that's what we're up against. So that is part of this deal is to, you know, a significant component of this overall $30 million is what the consultants are calling the backfill. And it's this temporary kind of training and accounting and fiscal organization kind of help that we're going to have to get it all on track. And then we got to recruit those people into a central kind of accounting core, push them out to the colleges so everybody's trained up the same way and knows what the goals of the university are.
So to summarize then, your ask at this point in time is for $1 million recurring and $10.5 million one time. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mine, just and I, you know, I don't think there's ever been any question of the importance of the system and of making sure that we're tracking dollars over at the university. But yeah, I think this is the third year we've talked about this same, at least, concept. And as I recall, when the university came to us 3 years ago, it was a $4 million ask, something around that. And this committee said, yeah, it's important. Go do it. We're not, you know, find money in your block grant and go do it. And the response was then, and last year was, you know, we really can't. We don't have that kind of money floating around in our block grant. But now you come to us and you say, give us the extra 10 and a half and we'll find 11 and a half million. And so, I mean, what's changed? How can we have any confidence that if we go down this road, that you guys can find that sort of money to get the project done?
Mr. Chairman, three critical things have changed. One, I've been there 2 years now. I've had a chance to look into the place. I've had a chance to look through it. I believe that we have some funds that are set aside for reserves. And frankly, I mean, this is fair game for discussion, because what I'm talking about doing is taking monies from reserves that are set aside for specific purposes. But there's a whole bunch of them across the university. So Residence Life Dining Services, and I have a VP behind me right now that probably has crosshairs on my back, but I'll keep going until I bleed to death. So, Mr. Chairman, the Residence Life Dining Services has a reserve fund with which they take care of emergency building needs, roof failures. And in fact, I bring up the roofs because we just paid a whole bunch of money for roofs on various buildings over the course of the summer. It's set aside for that. It's set aside for disaster kind of contingency. If we have a pipe fail or a sewer line fail, which, by the way, isn't that out of the question, given the state of King Street. We've got some utility issues there. And so what I'm saying is these funds weren't set aside irresponsibly. I think these folks all believe this is a necessary funding level. And I'm saying, I believe you. But we do have a risk, kind of management strategy at the university. May not be fully unified, but we do have one. And I think for right now, the bigger risk is with the finances. And so I want to tap some of those funds, those kinds of accounts, whether it's a bus replacement account and you have to push out the replacement of a bus, or vehicle replacement account, that kind of thing. What I want to do is go across the university and find all of those areas. And then with the cooperation of the deans in this program evaluation kind of process they're going through, You know, frankly, I'm betting on that process to produce some monies in 18. So I don't have the money in pocket, and I will tell you that right now. The seed money is going to be this 10.5 from the legislature, and we're going to gather up over the course of these 2 years the rest of the 10.5 we need for the biennium. That's the difference, number one. And number two is we have a board of trustees that have prioritized this, and they back me on this.
So, assuming that the 10.5 is given to you, now you're already taking a $5 million hit in your block grant, so it's going to be even, I assume, more difficult to find the 11.5. But the rollout of this would start in, I mean, would we start using the 10.5, or are you going to hold it for a year or two?
Mr. Chairman, it's essentially 10.5 per year, because the 2 year cost is $23 million, remember, and we want to start, frankly, in March.
Okay. All right.
So that we have this thing up and running by July of 17.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Yes. Chairman.
On that point, and I just want to ask a question, if we just stuck with the governor's recommendation of the $5 million, how does that affect your timetable in this project?
Mr. Chairman, it hurts. I mean, there's no question about it. And the reason why it hurts, like I told you, the discussion with the deans was, you know, I think everyone walking into that meeting on Tuesday morning was pretty optimistic. Hey, we only got hit by 5 million. You warned us it might be 20. And my answer to them was, it is 20. And here's why. Because we have to do this, this, and this. And again, you have one of the new deans, a significant one of the new deans, sure, behind me. And I think those deans I think they understand how critical it is that we get our fiscal house in order on an ongoing basis. So I do think there's a commitment in that regard. And as far as the $5 million governor's hit, I think we have been talking, we've had a dialogue with the deans now for long enough that we've tried to get them braced for this, to say, we don't know what's coming, frankly. I mean, I do still have the pleasure of sitting on Craig, so I knew what the revenue picture was going to be a tad ahead of time, and I just said, you know, everybody at this place has to brace for impact, because we don't know how these needs are going to get met or how deep it's going to be.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Greer, and then Representative...
Yeah, but if only $5 million is approved, how does it affect the timeline of this project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, if we remain at the 1 million recurring, 5 million one time, and Bill is successful in finding the 10.5 internally at UW, we have a $23 million rollout over the next 2 years, starting in March 2016, finishing in 17 for this project. That leaves us 5.5 short to complete the project. We don't have 5.5 to complete the project within the rollout time frame. That would be the result of it. And so we'd be 5.5 short for this biennium, which is the rollout time for this fiscal system, for the first part of the fiscal system, that $23 million.
Then again, I'm not getting the question or the answer I'm looking for. Does that mean you postpone the project, or do you still go forward?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, we would have to cut back on the initial implementation and put it part of that off till the next biennium.
Okay. Representative Burkhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of a question that I'm missing, maybe I just don't do math well. What is the total cost of the project?
$30 million, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, $30 million.
Over two bienniums.
Okay. But, Mr. Chairman, so how fast do these systems go obsolete? What's the obsolescence rate?
Mr. Chairman, what we're looking at right now, that's, if there's any good thing about this, is it won't go obsolete, because what we're talking about doing is going to a cloud-based system. And so just like the budget office right now, continues to get software pushed out to them.
Right.
You know, they continue to update. And frankly, the outfits that we're looking at going with are the big ones. And, you know, provided there isn't a nuclear hit somewhere, you presume those guys are so big and have tendrils, frankly, so far throughout the United States, they don't go under.
Mr. Chairman, so I find it interesting you have an electronic system that will never go obsolete. Now, you've indicated that, now where are my numbers? The payback will be $3 to $5 million a year. On $30 million, that's a 6 to 10 year break-even point. I don't know that any business would invest in something that took 10 years to recoup your investment.
Mr. Chairman, it isn't about breaking even. It's about overall prioritization of university resources and making sure, frankly, that we're protected, that we're doing the right things legally.
Yeah. We don't know when. Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Okay, Bill, if I understand you correctly, that you're going to find the money for the university portion, and I do share Representative Stubson's concerns about where does that money come from, given what was said previously, and also with the amount of cuts that the university has had in the past couple of years and the $5 million, that it will come from reserves, so from coffee cans that are around. And so I think we would all like to know what are those coffee cans and how much are in them as we go forward. But the second one that concerns me is this notion about program elimination. And that honestly concerns me greatly, that I think what I'm hearing from you is that we're going to pay for a fiscal system by cutting programs at the university. And that implies that we have kind of extraneous programs. So I'm curious about what it is that we'll be cutting. Are we cutting kinesiology or secondary ed or pharmacy? What program are we thinking of cutting so that we can have money to pay for this fiscal system? And then the recognition that to cut a program means that we have students in that program for 2 to 5 years, and that we need to carry it out for years. And so we're not going to recoup money. We need to keep those programs going to get students through it. So kind of a multi-part question there.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll do my best to answer it in some kind of order here. I think as far as the program prioritization, that'd be a really fine. And I'm not kicking the can over there because I'm happy to answer it myself, but I think that would be better spoken to by a trustee in the room, because the trustees have been having those discussions, program priority discussions. That's number one. Number two, savings from any program eliminations we are well aware of will not produce any results for a couple of years, any financial results for a couple of years. You can't, you know, I mean, the university's a different place. You don't walk up to a tenured professor and say, see ya, whether the program is obsolete or not. So again, that's probably a question better answered by the trustees, because it is a management of the entire enterprise kind of question. As far as the coffee cans that are sitting around, I don't want there to be any mistake about this. I'm talking about all reserves, whether they are, whether they would be viewed as legitimate reserves or not. So I'm not talking about money that doesn't have a potential call on it. I'm saying the highest need for that money right now is this. Without it, we can't move this place forward. We can't move it forward in the way that the trustees want to move it forward, and the legislature has been directing for a number of years through specific program appropriations. We have to do this. And if that means that we put ourselves on the edge a little bit on some of those reserves, then so be it. That's what we have to do. It's a calculated risk we're going to have to take. I can't identify them for you right now, but I did identify a couple for you that I'm looking at, and I've been in touch with the people who are in charge of those operations. That's TransPark, and that's Residence Life and Dining Services. And I'm sure they're really thrilled to hear me say this publicly, but this is a full disclosure kind of need right now. It is at that critical juncture. in my opinion.
So, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just, very on the outside of some of those discussions, trustees, so I want to hear that. But we've heard some of these discussions about the number of programs, and it's not so much, I guess I viewed it not so much as elimination, but I think every organization goes through kind of a reorganization and a priority. And I mean, none of us are, we're not doing things the same in state government we were 50 years ago. I mean, things evolve and change. And I think that's the way I kind of viewed this effort. It wasn't picking winners and losers. It was time for, you know, evolution and reorganization. So that's my first comment on that. But I guess it would be helpful to see some of these reserve accounts, and just so we kind of have an idea what's out there. And how many accounts are you talking about are out there? Are there dozens? Are there hundreds?
Are there? Mr. Chairman, no. I don't want to leave that.
The same exercise in this committee with state. There's literally dozens and dozens of state accounts that have been there for decades that we continually watch and, frankly, appropriate out of.
Mr. Chairman, in the name of full disclosure on this, to the best of my knowledge, I think we're probably talking less than 10, and really the majority of it is concentrated in 4 or 5.
Yes, Senator.
Okay, so I understand, appreciate the need for this, Bill. I think you've created a good case. But I'm still a little fuzzy on the numbers. You say that the governor, the 6 million that the governor approved, one ongoing, five one time, isn't enough, as I understand it. So why did you only ask for 6?
Mr. Chairman, that's an easy one, and thanks for asking the question, because here's what we got from the consultants when we hired them. They said it's going to take us a year to, they actually came on board in August. And they said, it's going to take us a year to evaluate this. And I mean, I just shook my head and thought, I have no basis to dispute that estimate, because it's higher ed and it's complicated and it's a mess, frankly, at our institution in this regard. And so they said, it's going to take us a year to evaluate this. It's a collaborative process. We got to involve all the people who have a hand in it. I said, well, you know, we hired you. We trust you. You do what you have to do. And at that point in time, when we made this budget request, so that was July, we started talking to members of JAC and the governor and various people around the state, frankly, about what it was we were going to try to do. And at that point in time, given that timing, we thought, okay, we can't start implementation of this thing until August of 2016. What they did was they skipped a key step in the process, which said, do we really need to make a wholesale change? And I think they spent about a week on that question and said, boy, do we ever.
Okay. And to cut to the chase here, you know our finances better than we do. What do you want from which fund? In other words, how much recurring and how much one time?
Mr. Chairman, the same way it's broken out, but I do want to say, Senator Burns, too, if it's okay to say, we anticipate that $5 million being enough to get us started and carry us through to the supplemental. And we warned the governor and we warned the co-chairs at that time, this $5 million is the start. And we don't know where it's going to end up, but we're going to be back in the supplemental for more money. Well, now we don't have that time luxury. So I just want to be clear about that, Bruce, that's what drove that timing. And we did tell the governor, he said, in fact, when we had our budget hearing with him, he said, this system's going to be $30 million, isn't it? And this was in November. And I said, I sure hope not. That's not the indication we're getting. This week we got the number delivered, and it's preliminary. It's got a range. It's got bounds on it of about plus or minus 10%. Plus, I think there are some items in there that we have a little more control over, frankly, that don't amount to a whole big percentage.
Well, you also, being on Craig, you also know we probably have more money now than we're going to have a year from now.
Right.
So I'm looking for a figure. How much?
Mr. Chairman, the direct answer to your question is just what we laid out. $1 million ongoing, $5 million that the governor recommended, and add $5.5 million to that. $10.5 million, one time, gets us through 17-18. 19-20, we come back for $3.5 million.
So we want $10.5 million one time, so that's LISRA, and then and only $1 million ongoing.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any further questions? I mean, it's a big deal. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to go back and respond a little more directly to Representative Connolly's comments. I wanted to make it clear there that from the university standpoint and the trustee standpoint, we are not looking at cutting majors or cutting programs to fund the fiscal system. There are very preliminary discussions going on with Provost Jones regarding beginning a process to go through and determine historically if there has been certain majors, certain programs that are no longer as viewed as necessary programs by the college or the faculty or the students, and to update the programs and majors offered by the university. In addition, if there's any streamlining that can be done with regard to those programs, there is a whole set of university policies, as you know, Representative Connolly, that have to be followed when that process is done by the university. That is in the very preliminary stages. It is hopeful that during that process that there are certain programs and majors. They may not be eliminated, but there are some efficiencies that may be accomplished where you can, for example, take a communications where you have, and I'm not picking on Frank over here, but since I'm a graduate of the College of Agriculture, I can do this, and the business college. You know, there's an ag communications, there's a communications in the business college. Maybe some of that can be consolidated and some efficiencies resulting to have a communications degree with an emphasis in ag communications or an emphasis in business communication. Those are the sorts of things that Provost Jones is beginning the discussions with all the deans and administrators around campus. And so I wanted to make sure there was no confusion on how that process is happening, and it's not being used as a direct mechanism to fund any fiscal system.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question?
Okay.
Thank you. But now I'm a bit confused because it seemed like Bill Mai said the two places that the money would become available to meet the shortfall in the cost of a new fiscal system would be the coffee can reserves that are around and program elimination. So I go back to Representative Stubson's question regarding where is that money coming from when the university, when first of all, that we were told that the $22 million from the cut a couple of years ago had a serious and detrimental impact on the university. There's a new $5 million cut, and now there is the new fiscal system, which will take, it sounds like, $7 million from the block grant. If it's not coming from program elimination, where's it coming from?
Mr. Chairman, if I portrayed it as $7 million coming from a block grant, that was an error on my part, because that is most certainly not the intent. What we laid out with the deans was the overall need of the university. Where do we come up with this money? And that was the question, and that was, and we have a dean here in the audience who, at some point, you may want to hear from him as to what the discussion was. But the discussion, in my recollection, was, as a university, you as deans running the majority of this university We have to work together to identify what are our priorities. How can we come up with this money? Where can we gain efficiencies? There has been no talk about block grant cutting. There's been no talk about specific college reductions. None of that. It is at the very front end of this, and that's why I said to the committee right up front, the 10.5 that the university has to come up with, there's no way we're going to have that before next year. This is going to take some time to identify these monies and produce them. And so the legislature's or the state government's chunk of the ten and a half, if this comes through, that's what funds it through July of 17.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This will be a less directed question, but it goes back to Chairman Harshman's question regarding the ability to implement this over years in terms of modules, that we're not the first place to be doing kind of an update to a fiscal system. And so curiosity about, for example, putting in a new HR system, so we've been hearing about HR from the auditor, for example, and then A&I coming in. Can we, for example, get a module this year, a module 2 years from now, a module 5 years down the line? Can there be an implementation process that takes place over a period of time rather than altogether?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, thanks for asking that question, because Representative Harshman, back to your question, this is not going to be a one-of-the-kind specially built system like the computer system at DOR, okay? This is components of systems that have been used at other campuses, and so it's not, parts of it are tailored specifically for University of Wyoming needs and functions, but the whole system is not a specially built one-of-a-kind system where the state has seen those in the past and then all of a sudden they become obsolete and you're captive to that vendor. That is not the situation that Bill Mai is implementing here. And with regard to Representative Connolly's question, it takes 4 years to implement this system. And so that is the reason for the explanation of you know, the 10.5 gets us through 17. The next 10.5 gets us through the next year, and then we finish it out the next biennium. And so there is a rollout of this whole system that is being planned. But back to Representative Greer's question, if 5.5 is taken off, that postpones everything for another year and a half. And so it becomes longer than a four-year rollout program. And so it is already planned to be, certain components are built and implemented as this thing is rolled out. And as Bill stated earlier, the fiscal part of it will be up and running by 17. And that's the big piece of the whole system.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a lot for us to think about. We're going to take a break here. Come back. I'd like, when we come back, to introduce Dean Pishko and have him, I don't know how many of you met him yet, and, we'll do that. And then, we've had some productive discussions, he and I, and, I'd like to get his perspective on what he's observed. So we'll do that when we come back.
Mr. Chair, before we break, and before I forget, what I'd like to get, Bill, is a one- or two-page synopsis of what you just laid out with the costs, with the projections on both sides. So something, we'll stick it in the record, and then 3 years from now we'll see how close you are to what you're asking.
I have a head start on you.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I want to preface it with, I'm happy to do that. I've got one, actually. I think I can leave with you. I think I have a clean copy of it that I can leave with you. A, it's extremely preliminary. B, we have directed these consultants to come back to us at a point immediately before the legislature with a cleaned up, tightened up estimate of all of this. So this is the first, you know, plus or minus 10% cut at it. And we're hoping by the time you meet as, you know, by the time legislative session starts, they give me something with full confidence, which, you know, again, you're right. It's 3 years out.
And, Mr. Chair, one in conjunction with that, with these folks that have done it for CU, CSU, and those other schools you're talking about, if you could provide us with a synopsis of their initial costs, projection costs, what their ongoing costs are, so that we have a comparison ourselves to look at, that would be useful as well.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure what you're talking about. Are you talking, Representative Nicholas, about the costs of the system? They didn't give us a preliminary on it. I will tell you that. They did not provide us anything in writing with a preliminary. We talked, but they didn't give me anything in writing on that. But I'm happy to give you all of the documentation they've provided me to this point.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, that ought to be available for some of those schools if they don't want to give it to us. But, I mean, and that ought to be public information.
You bet,
you
Mr. Chairman.
You could probably garner up for us.
Happy to provide you everything we have.
Okay. All right, let's take a 10-minute break.
Please turn off your microphones.